the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast. I'm happy that we're having an opportunity to visit with you because it's taken Dan Dokic 15 minutes to figure out how to put together his camera so that he actually can see that bald dome of his. But we've got a great show today. We've got Luca Garza coming with us. And of course, we're going to solve all the world's problems when it comes to college basketball. We're going to forecast what's going to happen in the future and actually look back to what's happened in the past. So, Dan, I hear that you have a rant. I went on a small rant yesterday about teams. And to me, teams are all about chemistry. Teams are all about roles being defined. Teams are all about roles being embraced. Teams are all about having a group of players that do different things. Some guys got to defend and protect the rim and rebound. Some guys got to make shots. Some guys have to be a guy that you have to play through. Sometimes you need a play starter, a guy that can defend the basketball. The whole is equal to the sum of its parts. It's not one player or a group of players or the five best players, but the best team. So what do you think? Because I know I hear you're going to go on a rant.
No, I don't have a rant. Where'd you hear this? I don't have a rant, but I do want to know, do we have a big enough sample size now to say that Duke is better without Jalen Johnson? I mean, they're only 6-0 without the guy. I mean, do we have a big enough sample size? I say we do. I do say this, and this is not a rant. The Blue Bloods are coming back, Seth. I watched me some Michigan State last night.
They looked like old Michigan State.
Woo! Kansas? Thoughts on Kansas?
Well, yeah. Kansas kind of gave one away yesterday, but I thought Texas did a nice job coming back. Yeah, let's go through the Blue Bloods real quick. All right, let's get Duke out of the way. Look, here's the deal. Jalen Johnson might be a great kid. He might be a great NBA player. I have no idea. But I know as a coach, you were a coach, the whole idea is to put a team on the floor that gives you the best chance to win. And, you know, we go through all this stuff, and this is not a personal affront or anything else. There was a reason that Coach K played a player 8 minutes and 15 minutes, right, because he wanted to give his team the best chance to win. So that end of story. I mean, Duke is playing well. They're defending right now. The ball's being moving, 27 assists to 34 field goals. Mark Williams has been terrific in terms of, you know, averaging almost three blocks a game, which gives him some interior defense, which makes sure that Matthew Hurt doesn't have to guard in the perimeter. So let's get them out of the way. All right, now moving forward, Michigan State looked like Michigan State. And a couple things happened. I think Tom shortened his bench. Good move, number one. Number two, he put the ball back in Rocket Watts' hands. Great right there. Because you know what? In the end, Rocket Watts, you know, there's a transition period learning how to run a team. And that system is not easy. But you know what he can do? He can guard the basketball, and he can get him some easy buckets, and he can get in the lane. Gabe Brown has to play because Gabe Brown can get it going, make three or four threes in a row. But the guy that has absolutely been incredible is, and gone under the radar a little bit in the last few weeks, has been Aaron Henry.
Right.
Aaron Henry has been a first team in a league that we all think is, you know, the best league in college basketball, first team all Big Ten player. I mean, like what he's doing, rebounding the ball, making plays, getting to the rim, making shots. He's doing all the things we expected him to do at the start of the season in a new role. I think it's taken him a little time to realize, hey, I got to be that guy. And he was never that guy before. He was a guy that played off of that guy. And I think now he realizes what is expected of that guy at Michigan State. And they're playing with a toughness and a veracity. And they got enough guys up front, where it's, whether it's Bingham or Marble or Kiffier, that can wear people down at that five spot. But I'm really impressed with them. And I'm interested to see what happens these next 2 weeks because, you know, we talk about Duke playing themselves into the tournament. Michigan State's got to win at Duke. You know, they got to win against Rutgers. They got to win against Indiana, another bubble team. They got to win, you know, obviously against the top five really good Illinois team. Their bad loss is obviously, you know, and I'm not sure it's a bad loss, it's the Northwestern loss. But they're playing better.
What I tell you about Illinois and Iowa?
Yeah, but Iowa's playing pretty good now, man.
They're guarding now. I can't coach everybody's team. Like, I can't. Izzo's sitting there playing all these guys, and I'm streaming on TV Saturday. Stop it. Put in Rocket Watts, Gabe Brown. I'll tell you who else is giving Izzo really good plays. Thomas Kithier defensively. Thomas Kithier to completely neutralize Jared Jackson, and the kid Marble is too. Marble's playing fantastic.
Marble's playing really well.
And I thought Bingham was really good last night. You get those bigs playing, and they all have different roles, right? Kithy, your bottoms up. Now, nobody was going to handle Coburn when he got it around, so they just went to the quadruple team and said he's not passing it. But the truth of the matter is Iowa is playing much better. Hats off. I'm not throwing socks at Iowa. They're guarding.
I'm taking socks back from Iowa because I think Iowa right now is one of those teams that can play with those other two teams.
I agree. I don't know if anybody's playing with Michigan, though, Seth. Seth? Only Baylor and Gonzaga, Seth. Juwan Howard's my national coach of the year.
Well, you talk about expectation and productivity, without a doubt, that Juwan Howard, because the expectation at Baylor was they were going to be a Final Four team last year, and they were 1, 2, 3, or 4 in the country preseason. You talk about Gonzaga, they were preseason number one. You didn't talk about Michigan in that same vein. And, you know, to me, just the development, taking a grad transfer from Columbia and Smith, who's been phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
All right, taking Hunter Dickinson and having a big guy that wants to be a big guy and play to his strengths and not try to do things he can't do. And I'll tell you what, that dude works in the post. Like, if you – I went yesterday, the day before yesterday, and just watched his baskets. You talk about – I call it searching. When the ball goes high-low and you hook and seal and search across the lane. That dude fights for position. I used to have a saying, if you're not gaining position, you're losing position. He is always working to gain position. And then if you double him, like Ohio State doubled him some, I'll tell you one thing. He's spitting that thing out and making really, really good decisions, but their spacing is really good off of doubles also. So – yeah, Michigan, I agree with. But I don't think Ohio State's that far off either. I think Ohio State's got to be in the conversation as well.
I don't know. I think they're really good. But I think there is a level that I felt like in that entire Ohio State-Michigan game, Ohio State is playing great. High-end offensive game. 10-33, but still down. I felt like they were hanging on. Doesn't mean they can't play with them. Of course they can. They're very, very good. But I just saw a different level when need be. And let me go to something else relative to Juwan Howard and his program. I think player development has been great. Like, I think Isaiah Livers has been terrific. There's no way in hell anybody can tell me when Franz Wagner first got over here that he was going to be a defender, and he is a terrific defender. Sometimes we only look at improvement based on offense. We say, all right, offense. Look at his game is so much better. That's individual work. No. A little bit or a lot of individual work is getting a player to believe he can do things that he can't do or didn't think he could do. And Franz Wagner is guarding. And then I look at Davis off the bench. Terrific. You know what? The most interesting thing, and this never happens in college basketball, but among the most interesting things in the Ohio State Michigan game set was the words Xavier Simpson were never mentioned. And in college basketball, we always go back to who wasn't here, who left, who's not. Mike Smith has been that good. Like, Mike Smith has come in and given Michigan everything that Xavier Simpson did from a maturity standpoint, from a on-court sense, smart standpoint, defensively, but he's added the ability to go get 20. I'm telling you, you know this and I know this. We're always talking about the past, who's the not here. I didn't hear the word Xavier Simpson one time, and man, is that a testament to Mike Smith and Juwan and that entire crew. I think it's great. Let me ask you, let me go another
one. The only time we mentioned it is early in the season, said, all right, who's going to take over for Xavier Simpson's leadership, because the things he did defensively on the ball and the things he did in the end of games defensively and in terms of that running hook and, you know, coming off those ball screens. Michael Smith has been – he's great. Phenomenal.
And Livers, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to talk to Livers, but Livers is the exact guy you want on your team as an older guy. Two things, really smart, like really smart. And the other thing, really enthusiastic. Like, I went up to him. The only time maybe we did a game on the road, I was at Maryland for their game, and he was on the side stretching, and I smacked him in the stomach, right? Just kind of tapped, and just laughing, just – you know, hey, man, how's Andrew? I mean, just the greatest, just a great collection of guys.
Yeah.
And I don't see that doing anything but being incredibly difficult to beat in March. I do want to get to one thing, Seth, when we talk about blue bloods, okay? where are you at with two schools? And I think, personally, Virginia's moved into blue blood status. Where are they, and where's Carolina?
Yeah, Virginia, to me, is they have a nice team. They're not on lead eight. I'm not sure they're going to get out of the first weekend. I think they have a really nice team. They make you obviously defend the whole floor because they invert their offense. Kia Clark can disrupt some defensively on the ball. I think people that are making him try to score are doing the right thing. But they're so reliant on Trey Murphy and Jay Huff and Sam Hauser making threes and inverting and popping out, that's a concern. I mean, that's just a concern. I'd like to see one of those guys get him maybe in that mid-post area, rip and go, so they can get to the foul line a little bit. I thought they got really stagnant. You know, they're in between running mover blocker and running what I call read-react, which is just a form of five-out motion. But to me, they're really stagnant. They're not as good a screening team. They're not as good a cutting team. The ball gets stuck in Kia Clark's hands too many times at the end of a clock, and he's not Ty Jerome, who can see over the defense, make a play or score himself. So I look at them as a nice team, but not a team that can get to an Elite Eight.
What about Carolina?
Carolina's intriguing me. Obviously, you know, it's so crazy. Virginia absolutely smacks them. I thought it was brilliant of Roy Williams scheduling that Northeastern game because he got a chance to flush out that Virginia game, get up and down the court, get out in transition, get those guys gaining some confidence back, because I think that, you know, they got basically their hearts cut out against Virginia. And then that carried over against Louisville, who was coming off pause. That was the best I saw that Carolina run all season. I thought that was the best I saw them defend in terms of impacting the game defensively, like getting into people like Carolina used to do. I think that Kerwin Walton is the difference in this team. We talk about the bigs, and the bigs are great. We talk about the offensive rebounding, there's no doubt about it. We can talk about post-to-post basketball, and I agree with all that. But if you don't have dudes that can make shots, or at least people think can make shots, you have no space to do any of that stuff. Now, he makes enough shots. I think he's good, and he's a willing post-passer, that all of a sudden you have to play him, which opens up lanes for those guys to play in. I think that Caleb Love is getting better. His decision-making is getting better. So, you know, I can see Carolina as a second weekend team.
What about Kentucky? I think they can win the SEC Conference Championship Tournament.
I would not want to see them in the SEC Conference Championship. No. The same thing that Izzo's doing. He's got down to a seven-man rotation, and he basically had – I talked to me the other day. He had meetings with everyone and said, look, here's the way it's going to be. And I think that the other thing he did in talking with them is he basically turned certain guys and said, if you don't shoot the ball, you're coming out of the game. I don't want you to have any hesitation. You get an open shot, step into it, shoot it. If you don't shoot the shot, you're coming out. Because he's really, really trying to empower. He empowered Isaiah Jackson. It looks like he's playing at a different level. Absolutely a different level. Davion Mintz is making big shots and in tough moments. Boston's playing with a little bit more pop to his game. So, and defensively, they've been pretty good all season, but they've gotten better defensively because their offense has gotten better. And, you know, young teams, for sure, your defensive intensity is connected. Well, let's face it. Their defense got better because they're not pitching it all over the place and making 8,000 turnovers. Because when you're making 8,000 turnovers and the offense is playing ahead of you, it's hard to be a really good defensive team. So, yeah, I think they, you know, they've got two games left, right? They've got Ole Miss, who's playing really well, had a great win last night, and they've got Florida. If they can get those two wins, and Florida looked really good yesterday, Auburn team that I'm interested to see what Sharif Cooper does, but I think Kentucky's good. What do you think of those guys?
I think Kentucky
changed your location again.
Well, I'm struggling. I went from the chess set to the bar to my little studio here that we all have. I don't want to play Kentucky because I feel like Kentucky is going to decide, and they have already decided, we're angry. Like, I see them playing with a little pride. And when I read comments that they've made, I see that as well. I the same thing with what I read out of Aaron Henry about Michigan State. I mean, frankly, I think Kentucky, if I were going to say to you, the only team that I would, let's take it in betting parlance, The only team that I would make a favorite over Kentucky right now in the SEC would be Alabama.
Yeah.
That'd be it. Like, would you take Tennessee over Kentucky?
No, I mean, Tennessee, I don't think Tennessee's – I think Tennessee –
Would you take Florida over Kentucky?
We'll find out this weekend. No, I wouldn't right now. I think that their guards have grown up a little bit.
Let's do this with other leagues. Would you take right now? You wouldn't take Illinois over Michigan State because Michigan State just beat Illinois, right? I'd take Iowa, Ohio State, Michigan over Michigan State right now. That might be it in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I'm not down. Like, here's the thing. One game, I'm not down on. Like, Illinois didn't play well yesterday. Like, I mean,
no, I'm not saying like down on it. I'm not saying down on at all. What I'm saying is,
I'm going to buy you an iPad.
I got an iPad. I'm on my iPad. I just can't. I'm just
going to get you a bigger iPad that is like a thing you can hold it up on.
He needs a stand, is what he needs.
Yeah, he needs a stand. I'm going to get you a stand.
All right, I'm good now.
And I know things. I mean, I know things are tough. I mean, get a couple more XM radio hits, and you'll be fine.
All right, I'm not down on Illinois, okay? All right, I'm not down on them. But they got beat pretty good most of the game yesterday.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't like we hit 15.
You're high on Michigan State, not down on Illinois.
Thank you. God, you're good. I'm really high on Michigan State. When I see Bingham come on, I think that's big. All right, let me go this route. ACC, all right? Duke, who right now in a tournament setting is better than Duke?
Florida State.
That's it. We're going to see with North Carolina coming up, right?
Yeah, we got North Carolina last game of the season, as always. Yeah, and I think Carolina. Look, I mean, Carolina can pound them inside. It'll be interesting to see how Mark Williams deals with that post-to-post action. It was a great game last time in Cameron. It'll be interesting to see how it is in, obviously, the Dean Dome. It will challenge Carolina's guards. I mean, you know, Carolina's as good as Caleb Love, RJ Davis, and those guys take
care of
it. If they take their basketball, they're fine. If they don't, they're not good.
All right, all that analysis is great, and that you know,
I get paid for it.
I know, but I'm trying to get to like we all discount these teams, right? I did. I'm like, oh, Michigan State was done. In fact, Charles Barkley,
you're a man of bold statements.
I'm a man of common sense. It's so funny. I did a game. I think it was Purdue, Michigan State. After the game, Charles Barkley texted me when I said on air, like they showed Michigan State's schedule, and they said, well, where are the wins come from? I said, they got no more wins, right? And now, so Barkley texts me after the game. He goes, you can't win another game. And I'm like, I know, they stink. You know, and next thing you know, but so I discounted them. But my point is, when you look at projecting the NCAA tournament, or you look at how teams are playing right now, I don't know, man. Kentucky.
But they have small margins for error. So, because here's the deal. So, Michigan State's playing great right now. Duke's
right.
Playing great right now. Carolina, a week and a half ago, when they got whacked by Virginia, we said they stink, which is just the overreaction that everyone has. Not they stink, but that, you know, Virginia.
But they're not Carolina.
Yeah, but they're not. And they might not be Carolina because we think of Carolina. You know, we think the hierarchy of the ACC, and really, you know, in the last 5 years, it's Virginia, Duke, Louisville, North Carolina. That's just the way it is. I mean, now North Carolina has championships. But so, I mean, things change. But right now, this moment in time, I mean, look, Duke's playing well. Michigan State's playing well. Kentucky's playing well. And you know what? That makes to be honest with you, in a crazy year, that makes the next 2 weeks really, really interesting.
All right, can I go back to something else?
Championship week, really interesting.
Can I go back to something else?
Go back to whatever you'd like.
You mentioned Louisville coming off a pause, gets beat by 45, right? How about – I'm going to go back to Juwan Howard because I'm all in on the Juwan Howard bus. How about they sit out for 21 days, go into Wisconsin and win? That's another reason why I think the guy's the coach of the year.
I agree with that, but there's a difference in sitting out. And like Baylor came back yesterday and squeaked by Iowa State. I want to get to them in a second. And this is a good segue, as they say in the media business. Like Michigan was on pause, but they didn't have anyone with the virus. Louisville and Baylor, their teams were decimated with the virus.
Yeah.
Still a big difference. And there goes again. I'm getting you a stand. There's no doubt about it. I'm gonna get on Best Buy after this podcast. I'm getting you either a new iPad or
I'll get it taken care of. Leave me alone. Keep Keep spewing your wisdom.
Yeah. I get paid to analyze. You know, you haven't found that out yet. But I mean, to me, you know, it's just going to be one. The end of the season going to be really, really interesting. I mean, it's just the way these teams have emerged. Now, we can say, you know, these younger teams have emerged because they didn't have a preseason. They didn't have a summer. They didn't have exhibition games. They didn't have guarantee games. But you mentioned Louisville and Michigan. Michigan, they didn't have the virus. They just were in a pause because of protocol. But they had other things where they at least they could get into the gym eventually. Baylor and Louisville were hit with the virus in a significant way. And when you get hit with a virus in a significant way, your guys coming out, you know, and Michigan State early in the season, in the middle of the season, they were hit majorly in their pause where like half of their team had the virus. So, you know, talking to those guys, they all said the same thing. It's like you had no idea. Like guys would go up and down the court three times and had a hard time getting their win. Guys had the inability to practice the way they normally would practice. So, you know, I think we got to evaluate the pause all different ways. I'm going to give you another team that, you know, Louisville, that they won last night. It'd be Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken. My last thing is I thought that, you know, like Georgia Tech, we don't talk about Georgia Tech making a little run. They got to beat Virginia Tech last night. I mean, they're in a conversation along with Duke, along with these other teams. I mean, that was a good win.
Do you think that 11 teams from the Big Ten or from the ACC should be in the tournament like Josh Pastner said?
I tweeted about that. I said, Josh, I love you, but come on now. Give me a break.
Look at the big fella. Oh,
the big man. There he is.
The big guy.
Zilla man. Oh. There we go. Hey, Luca, we're going to welcome Luca Garza in here right now. And I know you know Dan Dockage very well. But, you know, do you understand what you've just gotten yourself into? Because
what do you mean?
This is not your normal podcast. Now, this is just a bunch of coaches. We might be killing you eventually. We're definitely killing Fran at some point of this interview. There's no doubt about it. That's just kind of the way we are because we laugh at ourselves as much as we laugh at anyone else. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Well, hey, so this season, obviously been incredible, just getting through, getting to this point. Just overall, what's your take on the season and getting to – we're at the end of February. We're almost in March.
You know, I think you just have to give credit to, you know, a lot of student athletes over the country just being really smart about what they're doing and just make sure they stay as healthy as possible. I know our team has done an incredible job of just, you know, avoiding going in public, just really just going from home to the gym and really making sure that we stay safe and make sure there's no pause or anything that can disrupt our season. So, credit to all our guys for doing that and helping us get through it. Cause we're, you know, it's amazing to just be playing basketball consistently, you know, after having doubts about, you know, is it the season going to get all the way through? Are we going to shut down? But our ability to be able to stay and play consistently has been awesome.
I'm a bit of a narcissist. So like you're going to be player of the year in the country last year, probably this year too. Okay. But all of a sudden, the season gets shut down, like in the middle of it, right? I mean, I'm assuming you were in Indy for the NCAA or for the Big Ten tournament when it got shut down.
Yeah, we just finished pregame meal. We were getting ready to
right. How, like, on a personal level, I get the whole meal. I wanted to, you know, play with my teammates and all. I get all that, but on a personal level, for you, how disappointing was that?
I think it was just. You know, I think it was really upsetting, you know, for everybody, but especially me. You know, I wanted to be able to, you know, lead this team in the tournament, you know, not only Big Ten tournament, but in the national tournament. I wanted to, you know, the year before I wasn't, you know, I was obviously I had a huge role on the team, but I wasn't like I was last year. I wasn't the leader, the guy. And I wanted to see what, you know, this team could do in March. And I felt like we were a really good team and we were clicking. You know, we had a couple of bumps in a row, but you know, I felt like we were a team that once we got out of the Big Ten, you know, it would have been hard to scout us in March, and I think it would have put teams in a tough position. And so, you know, it's obviously upsetting, and it's something that, you know, really fueled me to come back. It's just that, you know, I wanted that chance to play in March, you know, because, you know, I didn't get to do the chance to do that in my freshman year because we were 14-19. And then my sophomore year, you know, we were overtime away from the Sweet 16, and that feeling is, you know, still eating at me, and a lot of guys were still there from that team. So, you know, I think that's something that, you know, continued to, being in the front of my mind going forward to the end of the season.
You work, I think, what I've been told, harder than anybody. In fact, you run and play harder. And I've said this for 3 years about you. First time I saw you as a freshman, like, holy hell, this guy does everything hard. But you also trained in a damn volcano. Can you explain to people about training in a damn volcano?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, my dad's college coach, Coach Bill Trumbo, he retired in Hawaii and was living on the Big Island, and he was living on the volcano. So, he was working me out every single day. We were going through a diet plan, and I lost a lot of weight. I got a lot stronger, and that was really when I made a huge transition. Because everyone always had their doubts about me and my athleticism, getting to that next level. And at first, people thought, always a mid-major guy, he's not a high-major guy. And then, I kind of really worked hard to make sure that, I made the most out of my body. I'm not the fastest or the quickest guy, but, I put myself in a position where if I just play hard, I can run with anybody and anything like that. So, I worked really hard, especially in that month. I think I lost 25, 30 pounds.
Well, what did you do? What did you run up the volcano? What did you do?
There was a lot of things. There was a local high school, so a lot of it was running hills by the high school, running the track. Obviously there was a gym workout every single day, twice a day. I was getting three workouts in a day and a run to start my morning at like 8 a.m. every morning. And they had me on a diet plan. They were just controlling what I was eating, making sure I was staying healthy, and it really, really helped me. And I started to feel really good, about myself. And I was jumping higher, and it's not really that high, but I was jumping higher than I was before that. I was starting to push towards maximizing my potential as an athlete. And I've been continuing to do that, since then. Maybe not on a volcano, but, every off season, I'm really pushing myself to just try to make the most out of my body.
You said two things a second ago that kind of was really interesting that probably you haven't heard a lot of college guys say recently. Like, you could have went out and at worst, you could have made a ton of money in Europe. You could have. I mean, it's just the way it is. I mean, you would have made a real check in Europe. My brother coaches overseas. I mean, you're a 7-footer that could step out and shoot, that runs the court, competes like hell. But you came back to college, as people think, for nothing, but it really isn't for nothing, to win and have that experience. Like, is that it? I mean, so for all the people, so these guys are exploited. Did you ever feel exploited? Because you could have left, man. You could have made money, but you wanted to have that. You wanted, whether it's to see your jersey up in the rafters or to see that Final Four banner. I mean, what was it?
For me, I think, when you're a little kid, you obviously dream of playing in the NBA. But for me as a kid, I always dreamed of playing on a great NCAA tournament team, a great top college team. And I think not having the chance to do that last year with our tournament team and seeing the potential of what this crew could be, that just kind of outweighed, any sort of money. I feel really confident in myself. And I feel like whenever I have made that decision to go to the next level, I feel like I'm going to make it just because I'm going to work as hard as I can. But, I love college basketball. I really do. And I think it's awesome. Obviously, different people think, different stuff about being exploited. And, I really don't have too much of an opinion on that. I obviously agree that, athletes, probably should get paid. But, for me, I love playing college basketball. And, it didn't really matter to me that I wasn't going to get paid this year. I wanted the opportunity to make history with, my teammates, my brothers. And I just wouldn't have felt right leaving and not finishing, my career here with the potential of the team that we had. So, I couldn't leave my teammates. I couldn't leave my coaches. They had invested so much into me that it didn't feel right leaving without, kind of finishing what I started here.
That's cool. I just to follow up, you played for Chuck Drizzell.
Yes,
son of the great Charles Lefty Drizzell. Mm-hmm. So you got to have a good lefty story. I know coaches had to be around at some point in your high school career. And I know he had to either pick up the phone and call you or say something to you. Because one thing about coach, I get calls from him about once a month. I know he could tell a story or give advice.
Yes. I mean, I would, I've always be working out with Chuck Drizzell. We'd be in the gym by ourselves. And, at some point in the workout, always, you know, we'd be doing something and he'd be thinking of something to say and he just called Lefty. And Lefty didn't really know how to work FaceTime. So Lefty's wife, like, was trying to handle the phone and he's in the bathtub, you know, trying to explain to me how to do a drill and telling me about, you know, one of the guys he was coaching and how he was doing the drill. And it was just really, really funny. But, you know, it was always so awesome to have that relationship. You know, he called me, you know, before, you know, I was going to work out and some people were going to come watch me. And, you know, his biggest thing was, don't forget your shoes. You know, he had a guy who was going to go to an NBA workout and forgot his shoes, and the team ended up not signing him. And so it was so funny. He had stories for days. You know, he told me a bunch of things, and, you know, Coach Chuck Rizzell always told me, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And I know that's a Lefty quote, and that's something that's, you know, very, you know, dear to me. And that holds, you know, over my head all the time, is just, if I continue to work hard, I'm going to continue to get lucky. So I've really been blessed to have, like, the family of people that have helped me, you know, with this game. And Chuck and Lefty are very close to me.
That's awesome. Your current coach. Now, follow me here. When I was playing at Indiana for Bob Knight, he would call you over and yell at you, okay, like crazy. And we were always told, like, man, just stare at him. Like, when he's yelling, just stare at him. Just don't lose eye contact. And I used to Luca, I could literally see as he's yelling at me, Doc, could you no good mother, you know, all this stuff. I could see his eyebrows growing while he was yelling. You know what I mean? I could be like, so I'm staring. I'm like, damn, I think his eye. When coach is yelling at you, and that face is red and he's on FranCon 12, what are you thinking?
You know, I'm really trying to listen to what he's saying, you know, rather than the way he's saying it. But, you know, you're exactly right. When I was a freshman, I was told to look directly at him and not away from him. And I've seen what happens when people look away from him and he's screaming, because that just gets worse. But, no,
can you see his face getting redder and redder and redder as he's yelling?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that's when you know how mad he actually is, you know, the redder his face gets with the yelling. And I think that's when you tell when you really messed up. But no, I think, you know, the best thing about it is, you know, I just try to listen to what he says. And over the years, I've gotten really a lot better at it. And, you know, I've played, you know, for some coaches who have yelled in the past. And so I was used to it when I got here. And the best thing about coaches, even when he's yelling at you like that, and especially freshman, sophomore year, he's obviously going to, like, pull me quick or whatever the case may be, but he's going to put me right back in there and trust me to continue to go out there and do my thing.
So it's a growing relationship, I mean, right? I mean, it probably doesn't have – I mean, I'm guessing, unless he's trying to make a point to somebody else, I guess he doesn't have to yell at you much.
Now, no, I mean, he definitely still yells at me, but obviously, you know, I think when I was a freshman, you know, I was making freshman mistakes, messing up plays or whatever the case may be. But now that I've, you know, learned the offense a lot better and I've become a higher IQ player, you know, I'm not fouling people 94 feet from the basket. You know, he hates that and other things like that. So, you know, I've just, you know, grown smarter to make mistakes that, you know, if he's going to yell at me, it's, you know, if I, you know, took a bad shot or something like that, it's not because I messed up a play or did something stupid, because I really try to make, you know, the smart plays.
All right, here's the deal. I'm going to use a Dan Dockich line because Dockich has his own world in the way he perceives things. Imagine no one's listening to this. This is what he would say normally, right?
No one is.
Yeah, this is not a national podcast or anything, but no one's listening to this. All right. As a head coach for 22 years, I know when I had those out-of-body experiences, players would go into the locker room and they would laugh their ass off on something that I might have done in practice. You know, I might have, like, went to kick a ball and slipped, or I might have, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, there were out-of-body experiences. Dan had many of that out-of-body experience. But I know eventually you go back into the locker room, and, you know, sometimes it'll be, you know, coach is right, we need to practice harder, blah, blah, blah. But holy did you see blank.
That man lost his mind.
Yeah, it was. I got a question. Patrick and Connor, all right, I got to believe those two guys, like, have to be leading that stuff.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we're, you know, obviously, you know, it helps when we win or something like that, that we can talk about, like, at some point he blew up over the course of the game. But no, they're right in the forefront of it, talking about it and laughing about it. And you know, it's definitely a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, like, people don't understand. There's no, like, well, we don't want to say anything in front of Patrick and Connor because they'll go back and tell. There's none of that, right?
No, definitely not. You know, they're, right. It's not like, you know, people have this, you know, kind of idea of playing with a coach's son and what it's like. And it's really just like, you know, Patrick and Connor are just two other guys. You know, he yells at them, you know, as much as he yells at everybody else. It's no favoritism or anything like that. And especially with, you know, stuff like that off the court, you know, they're joking around about coach. There's no, you know, uncomfortable, you know, feeling of not wanting to say something in front of them because, you know, they, you know, they obviously know, you know, what it's like, you know, to play for him, and they share those experiences.
I got to believe it's some great, it's some funny stories though. I got, because hey, we know that Mrs. McCaffrey's crazy in all of them. So
yeah, she you know, she's definitely into it, and
she's great.
Yeah. All right, I said about 2 weeks ago, you know, I was not tough enough. I said Garza's tough enough, but I was not tough enough to win. And you guys, and not because of anything I said, I understand it, but I've watched you guys over the last three games. Your defense has been exceptionally good. You guys are sitting down, you're guarding, you're tougher than hell. What's been the biggest difference over the last couple of games, defensively only?
I think I honestly think it started at Indiana. And, you know, we had lost, you know, to Ohio State and Indiana at home and Illinois. And we just realized that in those games that, you know, there was a stretch, you know, where offense, you know, wasn't as good, and we lost the game because we couldn't get stops. And then usually, you know, we don't have that feeling because we can just score the whole game. And we just really, really locked into, you know, bringing energy on that side. And I think once we started the game out against Indiana, we were up like 17-4 or something like that. And we were getting a lot of stops. And obviously I got in foul trouble, and that, you know, really kind of changed the outcome of the game. After that game, we had a lot of confidence in ourselves as a defensive team going forward. We just needed to put it all together. And I think we've started to do that in terms of being able to shut down teams. We know, you know, especially we played Penn State the other day, and both teams were stuck at 54 for like 2 minutes. You know, we couldn't score, and we were able to get stops consistently and then pull the game out. And I think that's something that we haven't been able to do in the past. And I think we're just growing our confidence on that end. And we're just playing. You know, I think we've always, you know, played hard at the end, but we're more connected. You know, when there's a ball screen, someone's tagging, and then someone's coming up, someone's helping the helper who helped the helper. We're doing a lot better job, and I think we always talk about this stuff, and coach is always showing the problems in our defense, you know, in film and on the court or whatever the case may be. And I think we're really starting to put it together now. And we know that we can be a good defensive team. We've seen that over the last five games, and we know that if we want to win, you know, that's what we're going to need to do. And we're not going to be able to win just outscoring people, especially when we play, you know, the best teams in this conference. And, you know, this week is a huge week for us because we're going against two of the top offenses in the country. So it's really going to show, you know, what our defense is made of. And I know we're going to go out there and play as hard as we can and get as many stops as we can.
Kasev, can I follow up? Is that a hard thing? Like, you average 24, 25, and, you know, Wieskamp shoots it, and guys, you know, Connor has his role. He doesn't turn it over. You know, Frederick back really helps. Is that a hard thing? Because it's the same thing Kansas told us. Like, the same thing Bill Self told us. You know, like, look, our team has decided we're going to go through scoring droughts occasionally, no matter how good we are, but we got to guard. Is that a hard thing for guys to learn? Because scoring's it, right? I mean, everybody wants to score.
And I think sometimes, you know, when teams, you know, when our team started missing shots, that's kind of when our defense got worse. And I think when we're scoring and everything's going well, you know, we can get stops. And I think we've had a few performances. And when you look back early at the year, Purdue at home, we held them to 55. You know, North Carolina, you know, we had a couple really, really good defensive efforts. And I think we've also done a better job of getting the first rebound. And when we allow teams to get a lot of offensive rebounds. I think Michigan State came in here and, you know, we ended up winning the game, but, you know, they out-rebounded us and they did a really good job on the glass creating second shots. And, you know, that hurts when you get a good stop and you're not able to get the rebound and you have to play defense again. That just makes it all the more harder. So I think we've really focused on getting that first rebound. And I think we really have, you know, kind of made that decision. And obviously everyone wants to score, and we push the ball in transition. We speed the game up and we make it fast. So, you know, that also makes it harder, but our transition defense is also improved. And that's a big thing is that, you know, once we get back in transition, we stop them and they have to score on us in the half court. That makes it a lot easier for us.
You guys are obviously have a big game this week with Michigan. Like, you guys have started your preparation and everything. What's the one or two things that coach is really saying, all right, these are the three things we've got to do in this game?
Obviously, you know, they push the ball very hard in transition, as do we. So I think our biggest thing is transition defense. You know, they have some guards that can really push the ball and run, and they do a good job getting the paint and finding the shooters. You know, Mike Smith has been terrific all year at the helm for their team. And I think, you know, they're also another team that thrives off second shots. You know, Hunter does a terrific job getting to the glass and providing second chances for his team. So, you know, those are definitely, you know, two of the main keys, you know, for us. You know, we know we have to rebound the ball and get stops to be able to beat this team. And, you know, we can score with them, but we want to be able to get stops and you know, be able to close this game out. And we know it's going to be a tough one on the road, and we know we're going to have to be mentally tough, as you always have to be, you know, on the road in the Big Ten.
Dude, last thing before we let you go. This is pretty cool. This is really – you're the all-time leading scorer at Iowa. A Big Ten, very, 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 very high-end basketball program. You're the all-time leading scorer. Like, how cool is that? Seriously, that's awesome.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, it's definitely – you know, it's definitely a surreal feeling, and I think it's really going to hit me later in life. But you know, I think it just honestly shows that, you know, over the course of my 4 years, I've played with a lot of great teammates and had a lot of great coaches. Because, you know, obviously as a big man, you depend on guards to be able to put you in positions to score and get you the ball. And so I've really been lucky to, you know, play with guys like Jordan Bohannon, CJ Frederick, Connor McCaffrey, you know, over my time here. So I've been extremely fortunate to have some guys that made me look good over the course of my career.
Hey, is Bohannon and his little buddy that do that podcast, you've been on it, number one, and number two, if you haven't been on it, they've been a little pains in the ass to get you on, particularly that other guy.
No, I honestly have not been on. And they haven't actually. They haven't asked me, so I think at some point I'll probably hop on there. And I've listened to a couple episodes. I listened to the episodes with you, and I thought that was a good one. But yeah, no, I think he's doing a really good job with that.
Seth,
here's the deal. You said the one with him was a good one, and you know, I'm surprised he didn't say, "Of course it was." last thing, tell my man Joe Wieskamp. I had him. I coached him in Italy. With an Adidas group, and I love him to death. But is he eventually going to ever shave? Because the dude looks like he's never shaved in his life. He looks like he's been walking around Iowa before games. His cheeks are all red, and then he comes in and plays. I mean, like the dude looks like. I mean, it's unbelievable. And then he's jumping up and knocking down daggers. I mean, what's my man up to these days?
When the face gets red, you know he's hot, and he's cooked. So he's been playing very, very well for us and been really, really consistent. And he's actually helped, you know, when we talk about our rebounding improving over this last stretch, you know, he's been a huge part of that and getting up there and getting rebounds for our team.
He might be one of the best rebounding guards in the country.
Definitely.
Hey, man, keep it rolling, man. Congratulations. It's so much fun to cover you, even going way back when you just played. Every game I've done, every game I've watched, which is basically everyone in your career, you play harder than anybody that I think I've ever seen. I have to go back and think, I don't know, but congratulations, man. Everything that you've got, you've earned. And I hope the hell you guys get here in Indianapolis for not only the tournament, obviously, but for the Final Four, man. It'd be a lot of fun to watch. Thanks, Luke. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Luke. And by the way, you were begging for him to say something nice about your appearance on that podcast. It was unbelievable.
Okay, maybe.
Thank you guys both so much for having me.
Thanks, Luke.
I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
Baylor coming off the pause. I don't know if you had a chance to watch any of that game. Big 12 is no different than the Big 10 in a lot of ways. Now, there's seven teams that can make deep runs. I mean, there's seven teams. I'd say six of those teams could be a Sweet 16 team at any given night. I mean, that league is good. I thought Texas bouncing back from that blow up on the court was impressive. The way they came back in the second half, really, really impressive. And seeing Andrew Jones and Courtney Ramey interact in a positive way, looks like that thing's been flushed out. Baylor just figured it out and getting the stops and you know, Jared Butler making the plays that he needed to make at the end was impressive too. Any takes on those?
Yeah, I feel like we watch teams and there's a lot of really good teams, but I felt all year long, maybe going back to Baylor at Kansas, I think it was, and I felt all year long with Gonzaga when they played Iowa, and now I'm adding Michigan into this mix. Those three teams to me, you play them, and whatever the circumstance is, you got COVID pause, you got a road game, you got a road game against a really good team. They all have the added sense that I don't give a damn what you do, we're going to beat you. Like, and I've coached a couple as an assistant, one for sure at Bowling Green, two maybe. It's just so rare to get a team that's mature and can like Michigan withstands 10 or 13 threes. Baylor comes back from a pause where now, you know, another team's playing their brains out against them. Early in the year, what did Gonzaga do? You want to play in South Dakota? Okay, we'll meet you in South Dakota and we'll play you. There's really good teams, and I put Ohio State in there, and then there's these teams that just have a little bit more. And those three teams, to me, my opinion, could change, have separated themselves. And I love what Baylor did last night. That was not an easy win. That was never going to be an easy win, ever. And they got it done, regardless of how they had to do it. Come back, play good, play bad, doesn't matter. They got it freaking done.
Yeah, you knew it was going to take time to settle in. And you could see them kind of getting their legs and competing and finding. And I think the thing that's most impressive is that when they were struggling – even when Iowa State met every single run in the second half, like they had no panic. They had
nothing.
Watching them interact with each other, there was no finger pointing. There was no – and I give a lot of that credit to Scott. I mean, like Scott, his even-keeled leadership, but tough leadership. Like you know, he was challenging those dudes, but you could see within him, everyone continued to do what they do well. No one tried to get outside of what they do. And I agree with that. Was really impressive. You know what? The world's greatest podcast never disappoints. That was probably Luca Garza's most favorite interview in the history of his life. We got Lefty Gizelle in there. We got the whole McCaffrey family in there. We exposed everything and everything that anything that you could want to know about Luca, running it through volcanoes. And that's why wherever you download your podcasts, obviously download this because it is the world's greatest podcast. It is only one rating. There's no twos, threes, or fours. There's only a 5-star rating. Spread the word because the World's Greatest Podcast will be coming at you with great information to make you money during the NCAA tournament. We are done. Drop the mic.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.